is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiye Suwuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We have to accept we are in the midst of an epidemic. If we just want to go back to normal, then we have to understand that there's a risk that goes with that. The risk of a super spreading event triggering a second wave in our country is reasonable.
That was Salim Karim, the scientist leading South Africa's battle against COVID-19. Details coming up. Also, Libya's warring parties have signed what appears to be a breakthrough ceasefire agreement. And with preliminary election results showing, 82-year-old Alpha Conde has been re-elected as Guinea's president. All these and more ahead on African News Tonight. But first, our top story. Libya's warring parties have signed what appears to be a breakthrough ceasefire agreement at UN-mediated military talks. The deal aims to cement a month-long lull in fighting and gives a boost to the political process. But while the United Nations billed the deal as historic after years of fighting, skepticism rose quickly over whether the agreement would last as the civilian negotiators meet next month to work out sticky issues. Stephen Toroko Williams, the top UN envoy to Libya, who led mediation talks this week in Geneva, said a long and difficult road remains ahead.
Previous diplomatic initiatives to end the conflict have repeatedly collapsed. Among other things, the deal orders foreign mercenaries out of the country.
Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has warned demonstrators not to undermine national security as he called for an end to widespread protests that burst into violence Tuesday night. At least 12 people were killed when uniformed men opened fire on demonstrators at a toll plaza in Lagos, the commercial capital. Dozens died elsewhere in the country's worst street violence since the return to civilian rule in 1999. Since then, the government has tried to tamp down public anger, which flared after Buhari's speech to the country last night. People said that while he appealed for calm, he did not condemn the killing of protesters demanding an end to alleged police brutality. Despite curfews, gangs armed knives and sticks blocked major roads in Lagos today. A highway leading to the international airport was obstructed by blockades manned by groups of young men demanding cash from motorists. Buses whose drivers refused to pay were destroyed, a Reuters witness said. South Africa's Ministry of Health says several so-called super spreader events appear to have triggered a second wave of COVID-19 in the country, but some scientists dispute this. South Africa's already the African nation most adversely affected by the pandemic. Official statistics say more than 700,000 people have been infected so far, with about 19,000 deaths. Darren Taylor reports.
Health Minister Zweli Mkhize, who now has COVID-19, says it looks as if the second resurgence has started in Cape Town. He says infections have increased in the city by more than 40% since the start of October. Mkhize says his officials have traced the uptick in infections to local taverns.
Some of the things that are happening, you know, are very disappointing. From our side,
Lefo Mpila of South Africa's Liquor Traders Association says some tavern owners are ignoring measures to prevent infection, such as limits on client numbers and sanitizing hands.
We really get amazed when we see these pictures on social media that people are behaving this, because before business, we have to understand that COVID is here and COVID is killing. Human lives matter more than profit. We don't want our industry to be closed again. So we are asking our members to please, please abide by regulations of COVID.
Health authorities in Cape Town agree the city's infection rates growing again, but say only by 13%.
It was steadily coming down until the 1st of October. And then on the 1st of October, it turned and it's going up. It's going up quite sharply.
The scientist leading South Africa's battle against COVID-19, Salim Abdul Karim, says whatever the percentages are, the sharp spike is concerning. He says what's good at this stage is that the new infections aren't causing a flood of hospital admissions. Not yet, anyway.
When you look at the overall picture, it's not alarming, but there is a matter of concern that there is a trend in which it could turn.
Three provinces have reported rises in infections over the past few weeks, and this, says Karim, is a danger sign. Infectious diseases expert Professor Shabir Mahdi says South Africa's looming holiday season will add to that danger. In about 6 weeks' time, many people will leave the cities to spend the summer in their hometowns and villages and at coastal resorts.
My estimate is that we're probably likely to experience a significant resurgence in the first quarter of next year, probably around about February or so, when people have returned from vacation, when people have returned from whatever type of mass gatherings they've been engaged in.
Karim asked citizens to carry on wearing masks, washing hands, and avoiding crowds, especially when on holiday.
We have to accept we are in the midst of an epidemic. If we just want to go back to normal, then we have to understand that there's a risk that goes with that. The risk of a super spreading event triggering a second wave in our country is reasonable.
Epidemiologist Mark Mendelson says a second wave's inevitable, but South Africa themselves have control over how bad it can be.
It's a social contract, and the citizens of South Africa have got to put complacency aside and understand that this virus is still very much with us. You know, I did a ward round this morning on our ward with COVID patients. You know, if you're on the front line, it's very real. This has not gone away. Until a vaccines come, it's all about the non-pharmaceutical interventions, the social distancing.
But as shown by the taverners and their patrons, it's becoming more and more difficult for South Africans to accept that even after all these months, their lives and livelihood remain controlled by a virus. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
With preliminary election results showing 82-year-old President Alpha Conde was re-elected for a controversial third term, security forces are braced for more post-election unrest. Clashes erupted earlier this week after opposition candidate Seydou Dalien Diallo alleged election fraud and declared himself as the winner. Supporters clashed with security forces, leaving at least 10 dead. They say they will keep protesting. Amnesty International says dozens of protesters have been killed and wounded this year in violence leading up to the voting last Sunday. Even as swarms of desert locusts continue to form in Ethiopia and central Somalia, the UN says the situation is under control and countries in the affected region are now better prepared than 1 year ago. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, VOA's Ruben Chama reports.
Several nations in eastern Horn of Africa have been battling a massive wave of desert locust infestations since last year. Today, more swarms continue to form from current breeding in Ethiopia and central Somalia. But overall, the situation has greatly improved, according to senior UN officials. Cyril Ferrand is the resilience team leader for East Africa at the UN Food and Agriculture Organization, or FAO.
The desert locust situation improved manifold since the beginning of the year in the Greater Horn of Africa. There are no locusts in South Sudan, Tanzania and Uganda, and only few small swarms remains in Kenya. Altogether, governments, the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations and the Desert Locust Control Organization controlled over 800,000 hectares in the Greater Horn of Africa and Yemen.
Breeding is also underway on the Red Sea coastal plains. Consequently, additional swarm migrations and further increases in locust numbers are likely to emerge, but the situation is less dramatic than in the past year. Ferrand said authorities in the affected countries are now better prepared.
In June alone, we controlled 140,000 hectares at the early stage of the second breeding generation. This prevented desert locusts to migrate to summer breeding areas in Sudan. This means that we prevented desert locusts to reach the Sahel region from Sudan to Chad up to Senegal. This year, we prevented a major humanitarian catastrophe through surveillance and control.
In Ethiopia, upper bands are slowly declining in the Afar region of the northeast due to control operations, according to the UN agency officials. In the meantime, ground and aerial control operations are in progress. Ferrand says as a result of the control operations, some 1.8 million metric tons of cereal harvests were reported, enough to feed 12 million people in an entire year, as crops were not damaged by the desert locusts.
We also estimate that another 4 million pastoralists benefited from the control operation because rangeland was protected and animals could graze. In other words, we allowed for animals to remain productive, and we estimate that over 340 million liters of milk could be produced this year in the areas where desert locusts were present.
However, good rains in Eritrea, Ethiopia, Somalia, Sudan and Yemen, and the possibility to counter control operations in Yemen mean that the crisis is not over yet. UN officials say some swamps have been sighted near the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. More are expected to move to the Somali region, including the Ogaden, where they are likely to mature and lay eggs in favorable areas, while other immature swamps could continue southwards. Earlier this year, the World Bank approved $500 million to help countries in East Africa deal with the problem. The FAO official says more funding might be needed if the locust infestation continues to grow unabated.
At the moment, we have financial resources to run the operation until February, March. However, should the upsurge continue in 2021, potentially due to favorable climatic conditions for locusts, we will need additional resources to cover the period from March, April until June 2021. We estimate roughly that funding requirement in 2021 could be in the range of $45 million.
The UN says the situation remains calm in West Africa. In Kenya, a few maturing swarms of locusts persist in Samburu County. There is a low risk that a few swarms currently in Ethiopia may find their way to Kenya's northeast region about mid-November, while the next generation of swarms that form in eastern Ethiopia and central Somalia are likely to arrive from mid-December onwards. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
Witnesses say Cameroon police have chased and beaten at least 200 opposition supporters outside the home of opposition leader Maurice Kamto, who had been under de facto house arrest for over a month. Anti-riot police were deployed to Kamto's home this week to contain crowds of supporters demanding he be released. Police blocked Kamto from leaving his house after he organized anti-government protests in September. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
An unknown female supporter of opposition leader Maurice Kamto stripped off her clothes in front of his house Thursday and shouted at the large police presence that his months-long detention was illegal. The woman, in her early 50s, screamed that she would not leave until police allowed Kamto out of his house to speak with her. She was one of over 200 opposition supporters gathered outside Kamto's house to mark 1 month since police surrounded his home, placing him under de facto house arrest. Kamto supporter Giselle Malongo says she came from the western town of Bafoussam to ask why Kamto has been stopped from leaving his house since September 22.
Nous n'avons pas pu rencontrer le professeur Maurice Kamto, le président national.
She says the police violently brutalized and blocked supporters from meeting Kamto, a man she calls their president. Malonga says armed police seized mobile phones from supporters who tried to take photographs of the clashes. She says police also prevented them from delivering food donations to Kamto and his family. A reporter also witnessed police beating and blocking Kamto's supporters, some of whom were trying to donate food. Christopher Ndong is Secretary General and Legal Advisor of Kamto's Cameroon Renaissance Movement Party. He says police beat 13 supporters so badly that they had to get treated at a hospital.
Kamto was very furious at this gesture by the military, refusing people to come and give him food. After he has been locked up for a month, there was a lot of hot exchanges. We decry the attitude of government and its military operatives. We are saying this is, in fact, an infringement to democratic principles and democratic rights.
Cameroon police gave no official statement on the clashes and would not answer a reporter's questions. Authorities have not officially declared Kamto to be under house arrest, but police have not allowed him to leave his home since he organized nationwide anti-government protest in September. Cameroon Territorial Administration Minister Paul Atanganji says police are watching Kamto because he is being investigated for hostilities against the state.
I want to sound a stern warning to unscrupulous politicians that they will face the law. It must be clear that the discontinuance of legal proceedings does not imply that the charges have been dropped. Any further act of public disorder will take them back to square one.
The September opposition protests were against Cameroon, holding December 6 regional elections. The opposition says the electoral laws favor long-ruling President Paul Biya and his Cameroon People's Democratic Movement Party. Biya has been in power for 38 years, making him one of Africa's longest-serving leaders. Kamto and about 200 supporters were jailed last year for protesting against the 2018 presidential election results, which named Biya the winner. Kamto was released after 9 months following international pressure. Since then, Cameroon police have closely monitored his activities and all of his political rallies and protests have been declared illegal. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
The aid group Save the Children says millions of kids in the Central Sahel region who are out of school due to conflict, flooding, and COVID-19 are at a higher risk of falling victim to violence. Children in parts of Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger face a daily risk of kidnappings, killing, maiming, and recruitment by armed groups, the charity says. Mavis Ochera in Ghana has more.
Nearly 4,000 schools have been reportedly being closed in the Central Sahel due to attacks or fears of attacks nearby fighting or occupation by armed groups. Eric Hazard, Pan-African Advocacy Director for Save the Children, based in Dakar, says 13 million children are out of school compared with 8 million before COVID-19.
So when they're out of school, they're not protecting. And they definitely represent a fertile ground for a couple of groups, including armed groups, particularly for the girls who are very much exposed, not being at school, staying at home, staying in some environment where there is a lot of promiscuity sometimes, means that they are more exposed to any type of sexual abuse. And we saw that in a number of countries, the number of teenage pregnancy has been exploded.
Hazard says the practice of child marriage is prevalent in the Central Sahel region, as about 60% of girls in the region wed before the age of 18. Niger has the highest rate at 76%. He says more than 16,000 teachers are out of work in these three countries. He says the situation undermines the capacity of children to access their basic rights to education, potentially compromising a full generation. He says the region has a large population of refugees and internally displaced people, with about 2 million people displaced, 56% of them children.
If you just take a country like Burkina Faso, for Burkina itself, there is 1 million of internally displaced people in Burkina today. So the children who are part of this internally displaced people cannot get access to schools anymore. They cannot get access to education system. And so we should make sure that all those vulnerable groups, girls, refugee, IDP and so on, won't be forgotten when we reopen the school.
He urged the international community to support the millions of children trapped by armed conflict, saying there is a funding gap of $700 million of the $2.4 billion that is needed. Reporting for VOA, this is Mary Sautry in Ghana.
The World of Birds Wildlife Sanctuary in Cape Town's Hoot Bay area, which markets itself as the biggest bird park in Africa, is hoping for a miracle to keep its doors open. The privately owned facility provides a home for 2,000 permanently injured birds and small mammals and a place for others to recover until they can return to the wild. Reporter Vicky Stark spoke to manager Hendrik Liu.
Yes, the flamingos are right there. World of Birds Wildlife Sanctuary manager Hendrik Lowe says that's what makes this experience different.
Our concept is that you walk into the enclosure and you experience the birds flying around you. So you become part of the environment. Then we obviously have what we call the monkey jungle, which is small squirrel monkeys, which is open only certain times of the day, where you then get a guided tour in there and they generally come down and sit on you.
I asked a mom what she thinks.
We homeschool, and so this is our school outing for the day. And what do you guys think? What was your favorite?
The white peacock.
The white peacock. They actually open their feathers.
Yeah.
And the blue peacock?
Yeah.
Yes? Yeah, we love it.
Lowe says every ticket bought contributes to the rehabilitation work that happens behind the scenes. He says they get birds and mammals in from the public that are injured or orphaned.
We will then firstly try and get those animals back out. Sometimes it's a long process, sometimes it's very quick, sometimes it's something that was hit by a car, it was just concussed or stunned, and 2-3 days later you know that it's 100% and it can go again. Then we offer the sanctuary, so those animals that couldn't make it to release again will then find permanent sanctuary with us.
Lowe says there have been many cases that have tugged on his heartstrings. Just last night someone brought him a sunbird that was caught by a cat. Sadly, the bird didn't make it. But he says there have been many, many happy endings.
A blue crane that we got in from Hermanus that was stuck in a fence. He was hanging upside down, dislocated knee. He took about 3 months to come right, and then we took him up to the Arabella golf course and released him up there again. And that evening, 40 blue cranes joined him, and they flew off together the next morning. So, I mean, that touches you, you know.
The lockdown to curb the spread of the coronavirus has taken its toll on the sanctuary's finances. A generous overseas donation they received just before the shutdown has run out. And while they reopened their doors in August, visitor numbers aren't anywhere near what they used to be. Lowe says they have a fundraising campaign on the go.
We had a Backer Buddy fund that was running, still running, so people can still contribute there.
He says they have only enough money to keep operating for a week and a half. If push comes to shove, he and the founder, 84-year-old Walter Mangold, are prepared to extend their home loans. But Lowe says he's sure a miracle is on the cards.
It's my opinion. Somebody's looking down on us. Somebody believes this was created for the better good, and they will not let us come to an end after 47 years.
Wandering through the maze of aviaries was delightful. And yes, I already posted the pic with the miniature monkeys sitting on me. This is Vicky Stark for Voice of American News in Cape Town.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suwuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.